Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, it's the Anfield Wrap. It is the free show. It is John Givens hosting this week. In for Neil Atkinson, who's dancing naked around the fields of Werby Farm as we speak.
He's always naked, isn't he?
It's Johnny Fancy. That's all I'm saying. He's always naked in my head. You know, sometimes he sleeps. I can't believe I'm starting with this. Don't let me do this again. Sometimes when he's cold in winter, he sleeps in a jumper, but then bollocko from the waist down. That's bad, isn't it? Like Winnie the Pooh.
Fucking hell, honestly. What a start.
Don't let me do this again.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah, Neil will be back next week, don't worry, but you have got me. It is Ian Ryan, you've just heard. We got Josh Williams, he's doing his first show. Doesn't know what the fuck's it. You don't get this in the blood red, lad, do you?
Yeah, this is new for me.
And we've got Sean O'Donnell, who's heard worse chat out of me than this backstage at Boss Gigs. But anyway, it's a show in three parts, actually. We're going to do part one, which is a bit of a state of play. We're going to look at the transfers in, of which there is just one, but having a bit of a chat about sort of what that means or what should be expected. Part two is going to be a bit of a break. So from the room, I spoke to Imad from The World in One City, which has taken over the world at the moment. People probably would have seen it on social media. It's a big, huge event that's going on in the city at the moment. It's being supported by Nivea Men, who fucked us up with Imad. I went and spoke to Imad about it. That's coming up in part two. Really good interview, really top fella, and it's an amazing tournament that is taking place now and you can get involved with if you want. And then part three, we're going to talk about the current squad and who we think we can get more from out of next season, and can we try and bridge the gap that we need to the top by getting more out of what we got. But start with you, Ian Ryan. Liverpool have bought one player, Alexis McAllister. Were you expecting more? Should we have expected more by now, do you think?
I think because of maybe one or two of things the manager had said in press conferences towards the end of last season, it led you down a path of thinking he might pull the trigger on a couple very, very quickly. And I think he spoke, didn't he, about pre-season starting on the 8th of July and he wanted them all in by then. And we know that's the thing this manager likes. He likes to work with the players very early on or as early as possible. And I think, you know, most managers will be on the same page. So maybe I was expecting maybe one more on top of McAllister so far. But the bottom line is, John, no one's really done any big business, have they? No clubs have really moved yet. So I don't think I'm at this state where I'm worrying or panicking. If you go on social media, there's a lot of panic. There's a lot of activity on there where people are maybe losing their heads a little bit because maybe they expect Liverpool to be a bit further down the line. But whilst it is the way it is, I don't think there's a need to maybe kind of get too much in your own head. And I think the under-21 tournaments, I think that's playing a little bit of a part. Now, obviously, clubs would have known that was happening. So you could say, well, maybe they still could have got that business done. But we know it's difficult with tournaments because sometimes players will just want to switch off and do their own thing.
And managers.
And managers as well. And maybe they're saying, listen, there's going to be no business while this tournament's happening. So you might have to just kind of negotiate with one or two international managers as well in terms of getting access to those players. So listen, yes, I maybe expected one or two more or certainly one more, but you know, it's not panic stations.
What's interesting to me, Josh, is that Arsenal, Man City, Man United, they've not signed anyone yet. And you can get your head frazzled by links and things like that and thinking, oh, they're doing all this. But when you actually look at who's got stuff over the line, Arsenal, City United, they haven't bought anyone. Spurs have made a loan permanent. So he was there anyway. So he got his house. And Newcastle have signed an 18-year-old. And I know they're getting this fella from, well, apparently getting this fella from Italy, but it's not actually done yet, whereas everyone's sort of talking like it is. So does that suggest to you that it is still very early, or it's harder to sign players than we think, or that we do just get so worked up with? And I've seen it work the other way, by the way. I've seen people, you know, United fans saying, oh, Liverpool are doing all this and we're doing nothing. And I'm like, oh, fucking hell, do you know what I mean? Come and tell some of our fans that.
Yeah, I think this is where the panic stems from. It does stem from looking at what your neighbours are doing and things like that, doesn't it? And I think it's one of those markets really where I think everyone's kind of waiting for big money moves to happen, really. You know, you're looking at like even like Real Madrid and Mbappe and things like that. Like if that happens, I don't think it will, but if it does happen, that would open up the markets a lot. And I think Bayern Munich, for example, you've got Gravenberg there with a bit of an uncertain future. Lucas Hernandez is meant to be moving. Pavard's got a bit of an uncertain future. They're getting linked with Rice. Gravenberg is potentially getting linked with Liverpool and things like that. So it feels like Liverpool are in a position now where I think we want to move, but the market almost doesn't allow for that at the minute. And you just mentioned the tournaments as well, mate. I think Liverpool want a few players from that tournament as well, by the looks of it, in terms of scouting them and things like that. So I think it's just one of them where we have to stay on our toes almost, wait for the market to open up a little bit. And as soon as a few dominoes start to fall, I think it'll be like that, then there'll be a knock-on effect.
Sean, you're famously as cool as a chilled bottle of Highland Spring, which is available in all good stores. How are you feeling about it all? Do you sort of stay calm? Are you like Josh and you're thinking, well, you know, we need to kind of, you know, hold our nerve sometimes on these little things, or are you looking at me thinking, John, I'm a Liverpool fan, I don't give a fuck what other clubs are doing, I want some players now?
No, I'm pretty calm, to be honest, pretty calm. I think getting McAllister in the way we did it was really positive. I was happy with that. I think on reflection as well, you know, there's a few things that have happened that, you know, we obviously weren't going to sign loads of players straight away because we've got, you know, a change at a sporting director level. So this guy's come in, you know, quite late relative to the transfer market. He's clearly got his own ideas of how he wants to approach players, how he wants to sign, using his own contacts, because, you know, the second that he was official, the amount of links that came out the woodwork, you know, pretty much straight after he was enrolled was, you know, a big tell to me. I think the players that we're linked with are quite encouraging because you can see a clear path there and a clear sort of vision as to what we're looking to try and do. So I'm pretty cool. You know, there's some things that Klopp did say whilst he was, you know, he talked quite a lot about getting them in for pre-season. He did also talk about, you know, if we have to wait until the upteenth hour to the end of the day to get the right player, then they will wait. You know, they've shown in the past that they'll wait. So I think, you know, straight after the season, I was like, you know, we need to announce three players right now because you're sort of emotional and you're in the heat of it all and you're sort of still feeling a bit like, you know...
You hate them all.
Yeah, basically, yeah. But now as the dust has settled, you know, you get to reflect, you get to think about it. And I feel like actually, no, you know, I'm happy with who we've got and I'm happy with who we're linked with. And as long as we get one or two of those names, I'm cool.
In terms of players who were not being linked with, Ian, is there any in particular, you know, Declan Rice is someone who jumps out, but not to put words in your mouth, but is there any in particular you're thinking, do you know what, I wouldn't mind if we were a bigger part of the conversation for those?
Yeah, I think there are a few, and I think just building on what Sean was saying there, I think you do see this through kind of your own club's context, and because Liverpool have had a season where they've fallen well short in terms of expectations, I think that plays into people just wanting them to do a bit of business, so it looks like the plan is there and they're going to move as swiftly and as kind of quickly as they possibly can, but you know, we know there's some caveats around it. I think in terms of players, you've mentioned one there, Declan Rice, who I think he's great, to be honest. I think, you know, he maybe splits opinion with one or two people, I've seen it on the internet, but I think he's a really, really good player. I think where the opinion maybe is split is maybe around the fee and stuff, and is he worth that amount of money? But yeah, you know, it's not my money, so you know, if you could get him in, you know, I'd love him at the club, to be honest. I think he is.
See if Swifty will do another night.
I think he is excellent, and he really is. I think if he ends up going to Arsenal, he's a bit of a game changer for them. He's a massive upgrade on what they've got there already. But there are rumours that he could go to City now, and that is a massive concern. If all of a sudden you're looking at the midfield of Kevin De Bruyne and Rodri and then Declan Rice as well, you're thinking, fucking hell, this is going to be graft next season in terms of their engine room. And then I think there's Caicedo as well at Brighton. Now, obviously, we've gone and done the McAllister thing, but I really like Caicedo as well. I think whenever I've seen him play, he's just aggression all over the pitch. He's also a fairly flexible footballer, and he can do a little bit of right-back for you as well, which obviously kind of gets my interest. But in that midfield engine room, now I watched him against United in the semi-final in the FA Cup, and I just thought he was unbelievable. He just covered every blade. He's just a really, really kind of modern day midfielder, sweeps up, can do a little bit of everything, really aggressive in the tackle. And I think if someone gets hold of him this summer, and I think someone will, they're going to get themselves one hell of a player. And I think Chelsea are being linked, you know, with another fucking player. You know, Arsenal maybe will have a look if they don't get Declan Rice. Manchester United are sniffing around them. I'm a bit concerned that maybe we're not in the mix for someone like that. It feels like the fee, and you never know with fees, because they can just suddenly get, you know, their own legs and become something that you didn't expect them to be. But people are talking around about the 70 million mark for Caicedo, and you think, well, if it is that, maybe Liverpool should be interested. But you come back to, they've got to do so much business, I think, this summer. They may be trying to cut the cloth accordingly. And I don't like that, because I think they have had summers and they have had windows where they haven't done as much as they should have done, and therefore there should be the money now to go and have a really, really big go at it. But we'll have to wait and see.
Josh, any for you that are being linked around where you're thinking, like, mind the Reds being a bigger part of this conversation than it appears? Maybe George is onto it and we don't know.
Hopefully he is, yeah. But I think Barella's one for me. That link is...
Well, that's been stronger in Italy, which is interesting, isn't it? Which has got a bit of Thiago vibes for me on that, really. There's not much talk here, but over there, apparently they've gone hot and heavy on it.
Yeah, well, he's on a big wage and he's still got a few years left on his deal, so it would be an expensive transfer to make. Like, but in terms of just like the makeup of Liverpool's midfield and the rebuild that we need to do, I think a lot of the players that we're getting linked with, a lot of players that we have as well, seem to favour the left. Like, if you think of even like Kone and Thuram, Curtis Jones, Thiago, McAllister, they're all left side. And if you think of the right, we've got Harvey Elliott and Henderson. That's probably about it for those eights. But Barella has played in that right side of the eights for most of the season. He played there in the Champions League final as well. But for me, I think it's just the makeup of Liverpool's midfield next season and how it's going to look, and if this kind of 3-2-5 with the ball is going to remain and things like that, because that massively impacts the profile of the player that you're chasing, really. Like getting linked with Rice and things like that is, I mean, he's a top player, but my question would just be, like, where's the fit, though? Like, if Fabinho's staying and he's going to be there for a few seasons and we've got Bacetic waiting in the wings and things like that, where's the fit? What profiles do we need in terms of this midfield? Because, like, if you think of last season, last summer, two of the players that we bought, Carvalho and Nunes, both had great seasons, both good players, still good players. But in terms of the actual tactical fit, we'd never really operated with a fixed penalty box striker under Klopp. We've had like a false nine, haven't we? And we've had wide forwards cutting inside. Nunes was a bit of a different profile for that. And then we get Carvalho in, who thrives as a 10, and he comes in and we use him as a wide forward, we use him as an 8 at times. And I'm just thinking, like, you know, what's the profile of these players that we're after? And that will determine who is a good link, who is a bad link and things like that, you know what I mean? It feels a bit like we're getting linked with players and we'll decide that later on. But I think that stung us a little bit last summer.
We're just getting good players rather than the right players, you
think?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's all about the fit. It's all about, like, what the plan is for this player and what the intentions are.
So if we, I'll just stick with you, Josh. If we were to stick with this formation that we've sort of finished the season with, is it that right-sided eight that you see as the biggest gap in terms of what we have and filling it?
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. I mean, you always get strength cutting him from the right side, so he forms the right corner of the box at the deepest area. Then you've got Fabinho on your left, probably McAllister or Jones on the 8 left. And then the right left is probably going to be... Sorry, the right 8 is probably going to be Harvey Elliott or Henderson, as I say. And I think Henderson, it for me, doesn't fit that role particularly well. He's not. It's a bit of a number 10, really, isn't it, with the ball? And for me, he's not comfortable in those super tight spaces linking the game and that. And Harvey Elliott is... I think he's got that about him, skill-set-wise. But he's 20 or something like that. So I don't think you want to hang your hat on him for a full season. You'd ideally want him to bed him in a little bit more, I think, before he's like a regular and stuff. So that's where I would see a void, personally, like a proper starting 8 on the right side. And Barella fits that perfectly. But whether we're in that conversation for that amount of money, I don't know.
We'll see. This is where it gets hard, Sean, doesn't it? Because, you know, we're saying 1 minute, we want them done early, get them in. But then the next minute, we're all, well, you know, me and Josh having a chat there about, but they need to get it right this year because they messed it up last year. And so we want speed, we want haste, but also we want correct decisions. And sometimes something's got to give there. And so I guess if it means taking the time a little bit, but getting it right, that's probably... a better solution than going quicker and then going, hang on, have we actually got what we need here?
Yeah, 100%, and you know, agree with every word Josh has said there. He's completely sold me on Brella now, like I'm all in on the Brella train. But,
you want to get the Italian papers this yeah. morning, lad? It's full of it.
Yeah.
You look that cool with your cappuccino outside, you did it as well.
Yeah, I think, touching a little bit on what Josh said there, I think the important thing for me, and I think he's right about when we've gone and signed, you know, players for players as opposed to players that fit the system, is that Klopp as a manager and getting the best out of what we've got over the last few years has been when we've been a super well-oiled machine. And I think you've noticed that if one cog of that machine or one important cog of that machine comes out of it, we don't perform to the levels that we should do. It's almost like, you know, everyone talks about when Wijnaldum moved on and we missed him for a little bit. And I think we did to an extent. I think what we missed as well is, was when Firmino sort of wasn't a regular starter. And I know we went on to have the season we had when we, you know, nearly won all four. But I think what I'm trying to say is that the connecting players and the players that fit the machine have been the big unsung heroes for Klopp, or the big, the, like the almost like the cult heroes, because we as fans, you know, particularly people who go to the game, love them players. But if you're looking at a transfer and you're going to bring someone in, you don't necessarily think of those players who are like the cogs in the machine. And I feel like the people we've been linked with so far are more of that mold. That's why I'm more excited about the links we've had this year, because Klopp's a manager who sort of gets the best out of a group of players, as opposed to picking a star player and building a team around him, if you know what I mean. It's all about the group. So yeah, I think if we can get players to fit the system and we have to wait for those players, I'd rather do that than just go and get a headline signing to appease people on Twitter, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good point. It's something I'll touch on in part three, is whether new signings can get more, you know, out of existing players, and that's one of the ways, isn't it? If they're cogs that are making the machine work better, then your flair players, in theory,
yeah,
you know, should be able to show more. But as I say, we'll come on to that in part three. But just before we break here, do you think we need to get a bit better at selling? I was having a bit of a think last night and thinking, you know, when was the last time we sold well in terms of an existing first team player? And I thought, well, Manny left last year, but he wanted to go, and in the end we got a fee for him, which was felt a little bit on the low side, although the Bayern Munich fans who watched him this year might sort of disagree, because it's not gone brilliantly. But then before that I thought, you know, it was probably Coutinho going all the way back, and again he wanted to leave, and they really got every pound out of Barcelona for that. But you know, I look at, you know, maybe other clubs who, it feels to me, and this might be wrong, and you know, you boys can correct me if you want, but sometimes they'll be like, well, he's a good player, but he's not right for us right now, so we'll move him on to free up a space and stuff like that. Liverpool don't seem to do much of that for me, and I wonder whether that's something that, you know, the new sporting director, once, you know, he's bought all these players and got his feet onto the table, might sort of start to look at. You look at someone, I mean, Chelsea have to sell, but moving Kovacic on, they're not saying he's a bad player, it's just, is he sort of, you know, right for them at the moment? You know, Real Madrid will do it, you know, we'll sell good players because, you know, they're not necessarily getting a game or not necessarily what they want now. And I'm looking at a couple of our lads and thinking, well, you know, I'm maybe a little bit surprised, and again, it's early, maybe a little bit surprised, but there isn't a few more links to some of these. It feels like we just, the Liverpool career just sort of petered out and end up going on a free.
No, I think it's fair, John. I think when I've spoken about kind of transfer activity in the past, I've always tried to kind of link it in with the outgoings as well, because I don't think we have been particularly good at that. I think we've lost our way a little bit, and you've seen a number of footballers who've come to the end of the Liverpool career and just gone on a free. And I think the point always gets made, well, you know, if you're at Liverpool and you're challenging for honours, it's maybe hard to get some of these players out. I accept that to a point, but then it becomes sometimes about a financial situation, and you're just telling the players that they've got to go. You know, you can be as ruthless as that, and it does happen at other clubs. So I do think there is something where we have hung on to one or two for a little bit too long. And listen, if you are a club that is going to operate a model like Liverpool do, where you only spend what you earn, then fucking hell, you've got to sell players as well, and you've got, yeah, to get good money for them. Otherwise, it's got to impact on what you can then go and spend. So I think it has been a little bit of a problem for them over recent years, and I think they have got to have an eye on it and get better at it, because, you know, there are footballers there who've left on our watch, who, you know, they aren't finished by any stretch. You know, they've got to go on and have decent spells at other clubs, and, you know, Wijnaldum will get mentioned, but there are plenty of others recently. You know, we've obviously seen it this season where midfielders who've cost a lot of money have been allowed to leave for free, and I think, you know, maybe the trigger could have been pulled a little bit sooner on them. And I think, you know, the manager is someone who, I think he's very kind of into the whole, well, we are kind of one big squad and we bond as a team, and I don't think you want to upset the apple cart, but I think there are times where you've just got to make it clear to players that the future isn't here and you've got to kind of get them out the club, because that then frees up a space and you can go and do a bit of business. And I think that's where maybe we've stagnated a little bit, and we found ourselves certainly in the midfield area with the same players over a number of years when it's been crying out for a freshen up.
I
was just going to say, I think the not being very good at moving players on bit us last year. I think we've got away with it for a few years because we've been so good and we've been so reliant on a certain group of players, a certain spine. But I think last year, when you've seen, as I say, a couple of those injuries happen, a couple of the cogs in the midfield don't quite work as they should. And you
could
know,
see it coming, Sean, couldn't you? Using the post a little bit.
You could see it coming. You could see it coming. And, you know, on better at selling and better on players moving on. I think there's two different things, because from a net spend point of view, imagine if we'd been good at selling. You know, we'd be really in the minuses, wouldn't we? It'd be ridiculous. But I think it's more actually having those players in, having a squad number where it could be filled by someone who can offer more, is what I'd say from last year.
I think on the wages point as well, you make Josh, with someone like Barella, you know, with his high wages, but there's people on good money there who, you're already looking at and thinking they're not going to play a huge amount next season. You know, if we're getting these midfielders in, you know, how much is Thiago going to play? You know, Joel Matip, is he someone whose Liverpool career has probably peaked and now he's sort of on the decline? We're going to talk a little bit about that in part three, and people might disagree with me, but, you know, that's where you can maybe look to free stuff up. And that's why I talk about selling good players. You know, it's all well and good saying, you know, getting 20 million for Nico Williams, which we have been good at, you know, over the years. You look at the fees they've got for, you know, young players who aren't sort of quite there. But knowing, and I caveat this by saying it's not as easy as you think, like maybe they are having the conversations that Ian's talking about, and they're like, nah, I'm all right.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so there is those situations, but it just feels to me like, you know, maybe, you know, it is a massive summer, and maybe, you know, there's I'm a little bit surprised that there isn't a bit more conversation around a couple of these high earners maybe being encouraged, you know, to find a new home, to make room for your mate Barella.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. It's the high earners, isn't it? Like, yeah. I think we've generally been quite good at selling the lads who are just coming through, like the fringe players and coming out the academy. And, like, say, for example, Kelleher at the minute, if he does go, we'll probably get a decent fee for him. And I don't think we'd hang on to him too much, despite Klopp's words and things like that. It's getting rid of these lads who are established and have been in the door for a long time. Klopp has got a bond with and things like that, who maybe doesn't want to cut ties with. It's letting go of them. And I think at the end of the season, I think the whole kind of drawn out goodbye of Firmino, Milner, Ox and Naby. There's that many I'm losing count. That kind of defeats the object, really, of the Liverpool, certainly the Fenway model of, like, selling players to raise funds.
You might start hanging on for it as well, going, oh, I want me big day, do you? I want me big clock when I leave and stuff like that. Yeah. 25 years.
Yeah, it's a nice thing. It makes Liverpool look like a family club and all this, but it does defeat the object that, like, you know, is that really what we're doing now, kind of celebrating?
Especially if like Ian says, your model is around, you know, only spending what you generate.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're completely eliminating that method.
The annoying thing is, if it feels a bit like we've almost taught City a bit of a lesson beforehand, and they're now getting rid of, like, I've seen links with, like, Walker and, like, Bernardo, Mahrez, really established.
Well, they sold Sterling really well, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Jesus as well. Jesus has gone, hasn't he? And, you know, these are big sales, but City are, I mean, I hate using Man City as an example in any kind of thing, but they are doing what Liverpool should have done in the past, like, year or two, when it comes to these established players we're playing every week, or established players in terms of, like, first team regulars playing every other week or something. Take a fee when you can.
Listen, it is early days, as we said. Maybe some fees will come in, maybe a few more will be linked to Liverpool, and we'll see where we are at the end. But I thought it'd be interesting to see a bit of a state of play, and it was. Okay, in part three, in the room, we're going to do a little bit about what you want more from next season. If you are watching this as a video, you're going to get that almost straight away. But if you're enjoying this as a podcast, you might have seen last week LFC and Nivea Men released the latest Dear Liverpool video. It was Imad from The World in One City. I went to speak to Imad about the experience of Dear Liverpool and the tournament so far. So here is that audio for you.
it's John Gibbons from the Anfield Rap, and I'm here in Waverley to meet Imad, who is the latest subject, if you call it that, of the Dear Liverpool series that Nivea Men do. Now, people hopefully will have seen by now, I'm sure you've seen one of the Dear Liverpool videos, and hopefully you've seen the latest one, which feeds Imad from the World and One City tournament. Surprised by Trent Alexander-Arnold, shows him around where he lives, and then there's a lovely surprise at the end that we will get on to. So, well, first of all, Imad, thanks for welcoming me down today. Really appreciate it.
No, thanks. We'll be happy to have you.
I've also got Bowen here from the captain of the Nigerian team who competed in the World and One City. Won the first one, and we'll talk a little bit about that and the tournament later. But first of all, Imad, that surprise moment with Trent Alexander-Arnold, we've all seen it now. What was that like? Because I know you thought you were going for one thing and then suddenly Trent walks in.
It was very much a wow moment. If you can imagine being in your local coffee shop, sitting down, minding your business, and Trent Alexander-Arnold walks in. Doesn't happen every day, so it did shock me. But I think, just in general, the old occasion was one I will never forget.
Yeah, so you got down there on the false pretense. I think you were meant to be having a meeting, and then suddenly Trent's there, and then you're able to show him around your community as well, which must have been like a massive thing for you.
Yeah, so I was there on the pretenses that we was having a meeting with Liverpool. So if you can imagine, there's actually a funny story that goes before it. I'm like rushing around trying to get to this meeting. It's set for 2 o'clock and it's now 1:59, and I'm still not there, thinking, flipping hell, we're not setting a good example yet. I get in there and then I'm basically absolutely like winging it to try to sell this World in One City product, and then my mate who organised the meeting decides to up and leave. He tells me that he has to go somewhere, so I'm like, oh, okay, and I'm left in the room then with these two lads just carrying the conversation.
Thinking, oh, I'm not doing the best that can be there, and then suddenly Trent's there.
Obviously them two were in on it, so they knew what was about to happen, but they must have been thinking, flipping hell, he doesn't shut up.
Showing Trent where you live, showing him where you grew up, the places that are important to you, that must have been a really cool thing.
Yeah, that was it was amazing to show Trent. Obviously, places where, you know, the lads play football, where we go for our scrams, where we go for our haircuts, just to walk down the street, just walk down Lodge Lane, go through memory lane with him, of moments where we'd done this and there. As he mentioned in the video, he kind of knocked about in the same area, so it was one of those, he could relay some of the stuff that he would have went through, kind of thing, so we got to engage quite a lot.
You introduced him to your dad as well, which must have been nice. We've just met your dad. You told me what a big red is, got your season tickets and stuff like that. So that must have been a nice moment for you to be able to introduce him to the European Cup winner.
So that was another like surprise moment. It was just surprise after surprise. So as you see in the Dear Liverpool video, as I'd take him into a place, we'd bump into a few of my friends that were already placed there, kind of thing. So introducing him to all them and having stories, their personal stories about the tournament and personal stories about what me and them have personally been through, I thought it was all over then, and then they announced that there was more people here to surprise you, and then my family came out, and you're like, it's always daunting when your family comes out, because you're a bit like, you know, I hope everything is okay. But yeah, it was great to, you know, allow my dad to kind of feel some of the adulation kind of thing that I've been getting, because to be honest with you, my dad and my family all tolerate a lot from me, if you can imagine. So to be able to like show them that there's reward to this was a great moment.
I think as well, you got a Nivea Men sorted out for you to go down the training ground, didn't you? Has that happened?
We went to they've been amazing with us, to be honest with you. All the people at Nivea, I think it was Emily that we met, she was fantastic on the day, proper accommodating to us. They obviously invited us to the AXA. We were cheeky enough to ask for an extra ticket, to which they gave us.
Wow.
There was there was a bit of a mess up. Basically, I think I read the message wrong, and they were like two people to go. So I assumed it was me and two people. So I text me two mates, like, "Yeah, boys, we're going the accent." And then I got the message back going, when I'd sent the three emails, they were like, "It was only actually two tickets." So I was like, "Okay, I'm gonna tell this one that he's not coming." But they actually came back and was like, "Don't worry, we'll sort that out." Gave us three to go. It was an amazing experience. Met Bruce Grabillard, met all the Liverpool players who were training on the day we were there. Got to have a little look around and stuff like that. Very accommodating for us.
But obviously, the tournament, you know, is so your focus. It's the reason you were chosen for being in Liverpool, and the World in One City is now in its third year. You are so passionate about it. That's what you were there to sort of talk about on the day. And, you know, it's what we've been talking about just before. You know, we pressed record. The tournament has started. We went down the other night and seeing how well organised it is, feeling the energy. It is a fantastic thing. But if you could take us back a few years to why you started it and why you wanted to do it, can you remember the reasons why you thought this is an important thing for me to do?
Yeah. I think a lot of it boils down to my passion for football. Like, I've always been a lover of the game kind of thing, and not what you would normally love. Like, I like the fine details of things. I loved picking teams and putting this centre midfielder that played this type of way with this centre midfielder that played that type of way and see how that kind of goes. And putting a lad from, this is in real football, like I'd make drafts, for example, and make sure I've got the right balance of South American players with the lads from Africa and stuff like that, and trying to, I know it sounds crazy, but these are just things that I was very interested in. I was also a very peculiar person in terms of before mobile phones were like everybody had one. We'd have Saturday league games for my school, or I'd play for my Sunday league team. And if I had seen a player that was good, like, I wasn't shy to go over and say, "Can I have your telephone number?" And there's some players that were like from West Derby, and I'd have their house telephone number kind of thing and phone them and speak to them just about anything. But I didn't realise what I was doing back then. But what I was doing back then was building connections and links amongst players. There was times where when I realised that this was something that could, you know, take off. I started about six or seven years ago. What I started to do was, whenever I'd meet a footballer, I'd just ask them where they were from, and I'd put in my notes in my phone. So I've got like Spain, 19 people, Jamaica, 25 people. There's some who'll have dual nation, so I'll put them in both lists, and whatever one's lacking, we put. And then when I realised that we could actually do this, We wanted to come out with it, but obviously COVID hit. But that COVID was amazing in a sense for the World in One City, because all the fine things that I needed to perfect, we could. So we started, you know what, why don't we go the extra mile here? Why don't we do national anthems? Why don't we? And for me, like I said, I wanted to play for my country, play for Yemen. Never gonna happen. Being able to do it and go through the proper motions that a footballer goes through. Like, I just wanted to live out my dream, but never did I imagine that, like, you know, every player would then be living out their dream too, kind of thing, of playing for their nation. So, yeah, great moments.
Yeah, I mean, you've given so many players, you know, those moments, as you say, representing their country, representing their nation in this tournament. You know, we were down there the other night, you could see how proud the teams were as they lined up for the national anthems, walking out, and it must have been such a proud moment, Bowen, for you in the first year to captain, you know, Nigeria, you know, the very first winner. So you won the Ballon d'Or as the player of the tournament. So that must have been, you know, so much fun going into the tournament, maybe not really know what to expect. And then suddenly you guys are lifting the trophy and you're getting the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, man. Well, do you know what it is? Ultimately, yeah, it boils down to bragging rights. At the end of the day, obviously a lot of thing to do with football is banter. So like me and my friend Jesse, we sort of come as one in football terms. So it's like, if I'm getting stick, he's getting stick, or if he's getting it, I'm getting it. If we're giving it, we're both giving it out. So, and we're both obviously Nigerian. So going into that, it's not as serious as it is until you start, you get into like group chats and you're talking amongst like your teammates and their opinions on it is different to yours. It obviously everyone coming together. It's crazy. Only like Imad could make this work. Only Imad, like, he's a madman. He's a madman, but yeah, it's good to win it.
But he has brought so many different people together, different communities, and given them, you know, these moments. And you guys had the big win. But for every team, you know, have that moment of pride and of representing, you know, where their nation or sort of where they're from. And it's a special thing what he's been able to pull together, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. Like you said before, you it's your chance to represent your country, if what that means to you. Like the national anthems, the kits, even those like, seeing faces you aren't seeing for God knows how long, them coming out just to watch, it's brought people out. The atmosphere, obviously we was in it from start to end, so we witnessed the whole of it. Your kids, the kids are a big one. When the kids are coming and they're screaming like Nigeria, like friggin' hell, like it's something that you take home with you.
The kids was a big one for me.
When they all started coming to us, yeah, and bringing the flags and the noise.
Honestly, like, when I think about it, it's a tearjerker for me. I'm not going to lie, you know, like, I get into a game and the Ghana kids she had Ghana face paint on it, and she had a Ghana, and I was like, whoa, this is a real picture. It was a crazy moment for me when I seen that Ghana girl with a flag and her face painted in. Obviously, they were going up that day, do you know what I mean? So we had a bit of taste of it, but like, it was just a crazy moment.
But now you got like, you're doing your everyday life, like, you could go for breakfast after the gym, a kid stopping, you're like, oh, you're Bowen who plays for Nigeria, and you're like, it's like your life means something, like your life sort of means something. No, it's mad.
Yeah, no, it's great to hear how much it means, not just to the players, but to the whole communities, I guess. And for the tournament, you know, Imad, you obviously, you know, you want to make it bigger and better all the time. So when a company like Nivea Men gets involved and offers to support it in the way that they have, it must be great for you, because you're thinking, oh, I can make this even bigger and better.
Yeah, definitely. I think Nivea Men's support this year has been second to none. I think some of the people at Nivea have been tremendous to us, to be fair. We touched on Emily earlier on, who was very accommodating at very, very like, towards me. I could see how she was towards me family and that. Just whatever we've needed, they've really supported us in every department, to be fair. Credit to them.
So the tournament itself has started. We've done week one. When I saw you this morning, it was like the relief it's all gone okay. And, you know, it's been some great games. We watched a 3-0 thriller the other night, West Indies, Zimbabwe, which was a great game. It hit the bar at the end and everything. It was going off, you know. How much have you enjoyed it so far? Can you enjoy what it's going?
To be honest with you, this year, I haven't had a minute. Like, I said to me mate Sam, Yemen play on Thursday, obviously I play for Yemen. I said to him, hey Sam, is there any chance that like I can just have the day off on Thursday so I can half just feel what it's about, like the players kind of thing? And so he took a lot of the strain off me Thursday. And once the rest of the world and Libya had the first game, and at half time, once that happened, I was off in the changing rooms, chanting with all my Yemen teammates, doing all what we needed to do before we came out. The moment when you come out to warm up, I can't explain how amazing. It's just the warm up. Yeah. But, you know, like, I can't explain how sick that moment is. You come out of the changing rooms, you've got your strip on, you've got your training top on, everyone's watching the game, but you know there's anticipation for Yemen. So you make sure we're in the changing room, boys, make sure we all like represent well, walk out together. We all say that, but then by the time we get out, there's seven up there, there's two. great. It's been a great week. It's been, there's a lot of anxiety, as you can imagine, when you bring in cultures from different backgrounds coming together. It's sometimes, although everybody says how amazing it is, it's also recipe for disaster at sometimes, especially when you're playing competitive sports. So I'm always on eggshells, to be honest with you. But to be fair, everybody represents and does the nations proud. Everybody takes it seriously, and that's the main thing for me. Like, the players don't just see it as a, you know, kick in the park, and that's the main, like, I wanted to make sure that they didn't see it like that. I want them to feel like they're playing for the nation. I want it to be, you only register 20 players.
Mm-hmm.
Bowen will tell you, yeah, at Nigeria, when they had their trials for this year, there could have been up to about 60 Nigerians wanting to play. Yemen have got, like, maybe, like I said to you, our community's not as, we're still third generation, fourth generation. We've got about close to 40, 45 players who are actually capable of maybe breaking into the Yemen squad, but the 20 get selected. And that's a task in itself for the manager.
Mm.
So you can imagine, like, the way the manager's, like, life slightly elevated, if you know what I mean, in a sense of the responsibility they have of their whole community. The stick that they get, I've had the two Somalia managers from last year step down because it was like they didn't meet expectations to their community. I'm being serious with you. And so we've got two new ones in. We've got off to a flyer. They beat Poland the other day, 2-0. So it's like you'll start to see, like, the dynamics and things change. So, yeah, it's like building your own little football world, if you know what I mean. Yeah, it's quite crazy.
Well, you've absolutely done it. I would encourage everyone to get down to Jellicoe if you can. It's everything's on the social media. The social team doing a brilliant job of bringing the tournament to life. So if you're not in the area, World in One City on Twitter and Instagram, you've got post-match interviews, you've got action, all the results, all the fixtures going up in there. But if you are in the area, do get down to Jellicoe and watch some of the games if you can, because it's a brilliant standard of football. There's DJs and stuff playing in between. There's a great atmosphere. It's noisy. There's some great sledging going on. I'm not going to repeat one of the things the West India lab is told to stick to the kickers. We'll just leave it at that in a slightly more aggressive way. But it is brilliant what you've done, and the tournament itself. But I think allowing people as well to display, you know, pride from where they come from in such a positive way and in a different way is wonderful.
I think it's important to mention, and I know this is very cliche, and this isn't, this genuinely isn't a ticklish thing to say. The people, like, I get a lot of the, you know, praise. A lot of people, they do see the work that I put in, and there is a lot of work that goes into it on my behalf. However, the people behind me who are in charge of, for example, the social media, the lad who tolerates me phone calls at 4 o'clock in the morning, the lady who makes sure that all the people who come and watch it are accommodated well, we've got a very, very good team behind us. Everyone's a volunteer. Nobody gets paid. So they're doing it out of the love for the community, the enjoyment of what they're doing. But they definitely deserve a lot of the praise that comes with it.
100%. It takes a lot of people to want someone so successful, but often it's one person's mad idea and it was yours, man. So thanks so much for welcoming them down. Congratulations on everything you've done. Bowen, good luck in the tournament. We're going to be following you. So, hopefully you do well, and hopefully it can be a second victory for Nigeria. Who knows?
Not if Yemen have got any.
Thanks a lot to Imad and to Livia Men for setting that interview up. If you want to get down to watch the quarterfinals tonight and tomorrow, so that is Monday night and Tuesday night from 7 o'clock at the Jellicoe Hub, the semi-finals, I believe, are on Thursday, and the final is on Sunday, all at Jellicoe. It absolutely goes off. It is brilliant. If you can't get down, you can follow them on social media. It's at World in One City 1 on Twitter, or World in One City with underscores between the words on Instagram. Have you seen the video that keeper scored the winner?
Yeah, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, like last minute goal, keeper scored in the winner for the rest of the world team. So it's all set up for the quarterfinals. The group games have been, like, they've had a bit of edge to them and they've enjoyed them. But obviously we're going into the group stages now. Sorry, into the knockouts now. Yeah. It's going to go up another level. Like, they've
the crowds are lively. I would say there's a DJ whipping them all up as well. So I'm a bit worried they might have to move the final. Honestly, I don't think Jericho is big enough.
That keeper thing that Sean just mentioned there, fucking hell, that was unbelievable, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was absolutely.
He reckons he meant to, like...
No, I'm not having that.
He's shaking his head. Absolute no keepers that. Union there whatsoever. Like, he's saying he did these post-match interviews. Do you check them out? They're brilliant. The lad who does them is like, you know, he's very charismatic and all that. He does a really good job. But yeah, he was like, nah, yeah, so saw him off his line. And so, like,
saw him 3 yards honestly, off his line.
He basically, I think the keeper knew he, because it looked like a pen, didn't he? He was like, I'm going to get this ball. Far away from the post. No, it is absolutely brilliant. As I say, Monday and Tuesday nights are the quarterfinals. If you are in the area, take the kids down, go down and enjoy it. Pick a team and cheer them on. See who's got the most fans and join them. The whole community sort of gets behind them. And it's really good fun. And fair play to Imad for everything that he's done. He says in the interview there's a full team behind him. But obviously, it's his baby and it's his brainchild. And what he's done is absolutely fantastic. Okay, we'll move on. Part three, this is what do we want more from next season. I'll start with you again, Ian. Is it reasonable to expect, do you think, our existing players to actually be the ones who help us bridge the gap? So we look at where we want to get to, which is a minimum of a title challenge, I think. You know, you can't say you know, you have to win it or things like that, because different things can happen. But we want a challenge. We basically, if we can't have a season like City, do you at least want a season like Arsenal did? And so I'm not saying, before anyone sort of jumps on me, I'm not saying that they shouldn't sign players, that they obviously should. But I think if you look at the players we've still got and who underperformed last season, and I use that word carefully, because what I mean by that is we got less out of them than what maybe they could have expected and what we expected. So you throw someone like Diaz in, who as a season we didn't get as much out of as what you could have reasonably expected. And I've done a bit of a list here. I'll read them out. So this is my opinion. This is players who I think it could be reasonably said contributed less than their potential last season through injuries and form. So in defence, I've got Robbo, Van Dijk, Gomez, Trent and Matip. Trent obviously turns around a little bit. Midfield has got Fabinho, Henderson and Thiago. And forwards, I've got Jota, Diaz and Nunes. I don't know if you agree with that. I don't think... I'd be surprised if you disagree with too many. That's a lot, isn't it? So I guess the question is, how many of those are permanent decline? How many of those have injuries are caught up or age caught up? Or how many of them can we expect to actually bounce back, you know, in terms of existing players, or go up a level in terms of a couple of those newer ones to a level that means that actually by just raising the level of our existing players, we can expect to have a much better season.
Yeah, and this is the challenge, isn't it? And it's the unknown for us, because before, when kind of Josh was talking about Fabinho in midfield and whether he's going to be a mainstay again, it's difficult because I don't really know what his level is now, because I think he has such a poor season, and he's not the only one, obviously. There was a lot of them who had poor seasons. But I think him in particular, the drop-off was so severe and so extreme. I think it caught the manager off guard a little bit, just in terms of no one expected him to be kind of just as much off a cliff as he was. Now, there were signs that he maybe found his way a little bit, but I think they were only signs. You know, you didn't suddenly see him get back to his absolute best again, when he was literally, I think he probably was, you'd certainly make a case for him being, you know, one of the best holding midfielders in Europe at the time, when he was at his absolute peak. I think it was him and maybe one or two others were at that top table, and you're thinking, wow, if he's on form, it makes everything else tick. I don't know where he is, John. And he's 29 now, so he's not at an age where you're thinking he should be finished. Now, he's played a lot of football, and I think some of this is the manager asks so much of these players, and I think because we've gone toe-to-toe with this Manchester City team, that inevitably will have an impact as well, I think, on some of these lads. And I think that's the balancing act. You're not quite sure with some of them. And I think there are some where you're looking at maybe the likes of a Jota, the likes of a Diaz, who've had really poor seasons because of injuries, not because of anything they've done wrong. They just haven't been able to get into the team, and it's taken them a little bit of time. And I think with Diaz, you're almost seeing him trying to work back to a level, but it's going to take him a little bit of time. And Jota, I think, again, he had a really bad one, didn't he, against Manchester City, where he does it really late on. And I think you could see him almost frustrated with himself at times, that he can't quite find his level. But then he gets that goal. I think it was his first one at Leeds, was it? And then he went on a bit of a run, didn't he?
He gets 7 after Leeds, which is mad.
And you can see that suddenly confidence became a thing for him again, where he found it, because I think he comes back into the team, trying to work his way back from injury, but he can't find the net, and that's having an impact on him. But then he gets that goal and goes on a bit of a journey and a bit of a run. So there are some like that. I think Henderson, I just think you're now talking about a fella who's, what, 32, so I don't think you're going to get a great deal more out of him, to be honest. I think there are times.
Do you think
where,
it might be just by playing him less, you actually get more?
I was going to say, so I think there's something around just picking and choosing when you play Jordan Henderson, you'll get more out of him. But because of the points we made in part one, where we've left certain situations stagnate, he had to play more than he should have played, and that's been the problem. And people will talk about he now moves into the Milner role, and maybe that is something. But when you look at some of the players Liverpool are looking at, you know, this all kind of plays in, doesn't it? Because they brought McAllister in, who was obviously, you know, season pro, won a World Cup, played in the Premier League. And then some of the other players who I am excited about, don't get me wrong, but they are young footballers. And then there's this, well, will they just immediately settle? So they are being linked with maybe three or four lads who are at the under-21 tournament. And, you know, that could be great. If they all come in at the ground running, fabulous. But I can't sit here and honestly say I've seen enough of them. Now, the club will have, so, you know, it doesn't matter whether I've seen them or not, the club will have seen them and they would have had an eye on them. But then it's, if you are going to pick two lads up in midfield who are young footballers, do you need them to hit the ground running? Because of what we're looking at here in terms of footballers like Fabinho, Henderson and Thiago, where you can't really hang your hat on them too much because of different things. With Thiago, it's purely down to injuries. We know he's a great footballer. Get him on the pitch, yeah, brilliant. Rolls Royce, in a perfect setup, I think he can give you loads. But there are times where if the rest of it's not right, he can also look exposed. And then you've got the injuries on top of that as well. So there's more unknowns there than I like, if I'm being honest, because I think you can almost take it right through the team. You can look at the defence and say, well, you know, you've got Matip on your list there. There's a real case. He's been brilliant for the club. Don't get me wrong, but there's a real case for moving him on. But then you've got to go and replace him.
Yeah.
Joe Gomez, where's his level? I've not seen him at the level he was at 3 years ago in any kind of consistent way now. I don't think he's been able to string two or three games together where you've thought, and listen, he doesn't get that many opportunities, so that's a factor as well. But I don't think you've seen enough to suggest he might find his way back to that level where he was, I thought he was great, you know, next to Van Dijk for maybe what, 18 months, 2 years, you wouldn't have kind of picked holes in that back line. They'd had everything, but then he has gone on this kind of run where he just looks so far away from that player. And then, you know, Robbo could come into a bit of an interesting phase of his career where Liverpool are going to persist with the hybrid. What does that mean for Andy Robertson? Because his role's going to change and it'll bring different challenges. If he's going to play on a regular basis, all of a sudden he's not that marauding left back. He's almost playing in a back three and he's never really done that. So my concern, John, is that there are some unknowns, but you know, you have to caveat it with, you know, the club will have a lot more info on this than us.
There are unknowns, and that's the problem, isn't it, Josh? And you know, we're trying to sort of predict it, and the manager last summer predicted that, you know, we'd get more out of, you know, stick with what we know and stick with what we've got, and it's fair to say it backfired. You know, these people are paid to make these decisions based on, yeah, like Ian says, a superior amount of information than us, but also it is a bit of a hunch. And the manager's having to look at these lads and think, well, I expect, he can say, I expect, for example, Virgil to have a better season next year, but we don't know. Yeah. You know, is this where Virgil's at now after the injuries and stuff like that? Or has he sort of, you know, had a bad year? You know, you're looking at Joe Gomez, you're having a bit of a gamble. I'm saying, I think if Henderson plays less, I think he'll play better. But
yeah, I agree.
But we're guessing.
I think looking at the list you've put forward, mate, I think it's interesting because some of them I think you can put down to like they've had a bad season largely because of almost what surrounded them and the almost like the environment on the pitch, what they've been surrounded by in the tactical sense and stuff like that. Some of the other ones, I think you can, there's a question mark as to whether it is just a decline. And I think two of them in particular are like essential to the original Klopp's Liverpool in Van Dijk and Fabinho. I think they're the two who, even if Liverpool get everything back together system-wise and they get legs back in the midfield and stuff and they become a bit more compact and things, I don't know if they are just now past the peak almost. And I think Gomez, you could throw in that as well. But Gomez is a bit less essential for Liverpool's success than Van Dijk is in the back line, for example. And I think if you look at some of the other lads, Trent, for me, looked completely reborn in the hybrid role where he started to tuck inside as a makeshift centre mid. So if Trent's going to continue doing that, or he's going to become a full-time centre mid, whatever it is, I think Trent will be fine just on the back of that tactical switch. Fabinho could be fine now that he's going to be surrounded by more legs like he was originally. I think Nunes is a really interesting one as well. Nunes, I think, has the potential to explode. But I like a Nunes, right, to it. Bear with me on this. I like
Winnie
Nunes.
The Pooh.
I was going to say, it's not going to be the maddest analogy so far, Josh. So whatever you say.
I like a Nunes, right, to a boss pair of trainees, right? So...
We're coming with you.
You're coming with me, yeah. So you see a pair of trainees in the shops, you love them, and you think the boss and that, right? But the orange, yeah. But you still want to buy them because you think the boss, he looks nice and that. So you buy them, you take them home. Next day, you want to wear them. You open your wardrobe. You've got not an orange in the wardrobe. You've got nothing to wear the trainees with. But you end up wearing them anyway. So you wear the trainees. You don't look that great in them because you've got nothing to compliment the trainees. You've got nothing to make the trainees look good. So the trainees look a bit weird. They look a bit out of place. You end up wearing them a little bit less, and that's kind of the issue I think Liverpool have had with Nunes, in that they bought a boss pair of trainees that they wanted, that they liked, looked great at Benfica, but since he's came to Anfield, he hasn't been complimented in the same way tactically, as in, like, he's been, for me, he's a fixed, like, penalty box poacher for me, who stays away from the ball, threatens him behind. You build moves for him when he puts the ball in the net for you, even though he's looked pretty not great at that in the past 12 months. But for me, that's the kind of profile he is. But we've used him either like a Sadio Mane on the flanks, facing up opponents 1v1, you've got to beat that man. Or we've used him as a Bobby alternative. You're drifting into midfield, you're linking the play, you're connecting with those behind you. And I don't think Nunes naturally does either of those pretty well. So I think we've used Nunes like the lads in the past, but he's not that for me. He needs a new wardrobe. That's kind of what I'm getting.
Some more orange clothes.
Yeah, exactly. So Liverpool, to kind of make Nunes look better and to maximise what he's good at, to make the trainees look boss, you need to buy a new wardrobe. Essentially, you need to buy some new, you need to rethink the plan a little bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make sense at
all? It does, but we can't buy a whole new wardrobe.
Exactly, yeah.
So
but you can just maybe, I don't know, redesign your outlook in terms of the shape and stuff like that, which we have done in the past 10 games. So
I think they tried to do something with Nunes by putting Salah wider, didn't they? And I think that, you know, there's a couple of things that happened that probably affected things, like significant things that happened early on. So I think we're getting sent off in his first home game hasn't done anyone any favours.
No.
Because he's, you know, that we know that's knocked his confidence. We know that he's having to sort of temper the beast a little bit. It was the right thing, by the way, because he was wild and still is wild, and he can't be doing what he did. But I think that's massively affected his confidence, because, you know, if you're coming in, you want to hit the ground running, you get sent off in your first home game, I think that's just going to affect you. I think putting Salah wide was probably the wrong choice. And I think if Klopp was, and I know he did play a little bit more wide towards the end of the season, but if you think about the start of the season last year, he was on the touchline for most of those early games. I'm like, why has he done that? You want to get Salah in the central. And when Salah did play more central, you know, you think of the City game at home where we, you know, we look solid, he scores the winner and everything. It's almost like, okay, well, we made the mistake there. We need to do something a little bit different with Salah and not just accompany Nunes. So I'm with you. I think that, you know, we didn't help Nunes, but I also think if Klopp was here, he'd say, well, Nunes hasn't helped himself because he still can't speak the language.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
But also as well, you know, the pressing from the front and stuff like that, and Ian, and I think, you know, I think someone touched on a point before about, I think it might have been Josh, about systems and about looking at, you know, how the team operates. And that's a big long list I've said there. Now, they've even all had a big hangover from the season before, or they've all dropped off together, which might have happened. But also, if your underperforming list is that long, it suggests the systematic errors as well, or maybe even sort of leading this. And I think, you know, we'd be looking at this summer and thinking, how do I get my team functioning properly so I'm getting more out of, and I'm not maybe exposing certain people, because there was players last season I felt sorry for at times, and Trent was one of them. You know, he was getting, you know, torn into week after week, and I'm not saying he was great, but I was like, fucking hell, you know what I mean? We're so wide open that he's got people running off him and at him and stuff like that all the time. And I think, you know, I think the coaching staff and manager would look at a list like that and think, if there's that many underperforming, then it's not just individuals who are fault here, it's the collective.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think there's also the thing of when they realise, and I've mentioned this on other shows, but when they realise they're not going to be able to go and do what they want to do, there's almost this collective thing, well, fucking hell, we're not going to do it now.
Yeah.
And you'd almost see them kind of, you know, fall off together, because the aim was to go and win a league title. The aim was to go and win a European Cup, and obviously they go out to Real Madrid, but it was very, very apparent from early on they were never going to be anywhere near a league title. Mm. You know, you could see, couldn't you, from very early on in the season. And you don't want to write teams off too early because obviously people can
put themselves together.
Yeah, but you could tell they knew it. They knew something wasn't right. I think that plays into what you then see over the course of the season. I think on the Nunes thing, I think the manager, it was clear to me that he wasn't overly happy with what he was seeing. And I think you barely see him, do you, towards the end of the season. It's just little kind of fits and starts, I suppose. And I think he gets that goal against Leeds where he comes on. But I can't really remember too many moments post-World Cup where it looked like he was maybe showing some of the signs that he did show. I think kind of before the World Cup, I think, you know, I take Sean's point at the start of the season, that doesn't help him. But then he does go on a bit of a run where I think, you know, broadly speaking, I was pretty happy with what I was seeing from Nunes. I think there was loads to be enthused about. Don't get me wrong, there was a little bit of a, more than a little bit, there was still that rawness in front of goal where he was snatching at stuff and you think, well, he's got to settle, he's got to calm himself, he's got to, you know, be more like, you know, and this is not easy to be like a Robbie Fowler, but, you know, in those areas where you're ice cold and you just almost pick your spot, you felt like, if he had too much time, that was going to have a big impact on him and he was going to maybe fluff his chance a little bit. But, you know, he's come good at his previous club in the second season, so I don't think anyone should be writing him off, and I'm sure the club aren't writing him off. But it is a big season for him. It's a big campaign. You are going to have to be expecting a lot this season for the money Liverpool paid. But is he in many people's first choice for that game at Chelsea? I think I'd be quite surprised if he starts that match. But you never know because, you know, pre-season can go a certain way and form and fitness and all that. So that will play a part. But that is a big unknown for Liverpool because I think they got those goals. It was about 15 in the end. So it's not a bad return, is it, in terms of numbers? You know, that's, and everything gets over kind of shadowed a little bit because of what Haaland's doing and he's scoring a ridiculous amount, and because they're coming at similar times, people are bound to make that comparison. But they were at different stages of their careers. You know, I never thought for one second we were going to get the same output from Nunes that they were going to get inevitably from Haaland. They just didn't think that at all. But there were signs that he was starting to maybe be a bit more composed. I always reference the game at Spurs where him and Salah were linking up, and I think it seemed to click that day for him, where he wasn't just making the decisions for his own benefit. He was thinking about bringing other players in and stuff. And I think there were real kind of moments there. You thought, hang on, some of this is like kind of really, it's kind of landed with him. But because of that, what you see second half of the season, and context is important, you're thinking, fucking hell, he does look a little bit off here. And I think they're going to be doing stuff with him. The language thing that gets mentioned, listen, it's not easy to learn a new language, but it must be impacting him a little bit in terms of just taking instruction on. Yeah. And I think that's going to be something he'll have to take on board. And then we see where we go. But I think there is an exciting footballer in there. And I think if you can get him right, and system is important because you've got to get the best out of him as well, then I think Liverpool have still got a player on their hands, but there's a way to go, yeah.
The best players can get more out of those around them as well. And when Liverpool are looking for players now, you know, McAllister's one they've got in, other ones, Josh, that they're being linked with, you know, they'll be thinking, not just can this player play for Liverpool, but can this player get more out of what is around them? So I guess the question is, Alexis McAllister, is he a nice pair of black shorts with a bit of orange too on them?
Yeah, well, McAllister, I think, is the polar opposite of Nunes in that sense. I think he's a Swiss Army knife, essentially, in terms of, like, you can use him virtually anywhere in your midfield and he will find a way to thrive almost. He reminds me a little bit of Wijnaldum in that sense. You can play him as a 10, he can arrive late, he can link the play.
Come on, Josh, what trainees is he?
I don't know, what's the most versatile pair of trainees you can think of now?
Nice pair of Sambas or something, you know, just like a neutral colour.
Yeah, that's what he's doing, yeah. He's whatever you want him to be. He's seen Pokemon, he's like this sort of Pokemon. Just transform into whatever you want him to be. But yeah, he's not going to be a problem, McAllister. Like, I don't think he will be... I mean, obviously he will be to some extent, but I don't think he'll be too influenced by whatever shape Liverpool adopt next season. I think he'll be... I've got no issues about McAllister, like, no concerns about him.
In terms of others that I haven't listed, I've got a few more here that I didn't put on. I've got Gakpo, Salah, who I'm not hard about putting on just because his fucking level's so high, but I thought he scored 30 goals, don't be a prick. I've got Harvey Elliott, Kanate, Jones, Bacicic and Alisson. They're obviously on this other list for different reasons. Some of them, like Alisson, had incredible seasons. Other of them are young players who, you know, you don't want to be sort of hanging your hat on. But do you think there's many of those who can go to another level, Sean? Who could, you know, I'm talking about you know, we started this part talking about, you know, players who'd not got as much out of what we wanted. But for those who either have performed or the younger players who are still emerging, who were wrong to put too much expectation on, do you see a few of those going up another level again, which can only help?
Yeah, I do. I think we've seen towards the end of the season when we went on that bit of a run that Jones was one of those players who all of a sudden
played well for the 21s last night as well.
I think he found a system that suited him perfectly, and I feel like that's only a positive thing, because I was quite critical of Jones in the start of the season, thinking, you know, is he ever going to get his chance? Is he ever going to come in? Is it ever going to happen for him? I don't see him making that step. And now I can see it. I think the West Ham game in particular, I remember him just being really aggressive. You know, all the stuff that you've seen from him in the youth teams, he was doing it in the first team level, which was great to see. So I think he's one, if he can keep that aggression up and keep that up, that we can hang our hat on in next season. I think Klopp would say that as well. I think Elliot is a player who's sort of got in really young, and he's been, you know, Klopp persists with Elliot. So, you know, starts the season, Elliot starts nearly every game, doesn't he, when he's available, and I feel like, all right, he did sort of fall a little bit out of favour towards the end of the season, but I think that happens with young players. And if you're saying someone who's going to kick on again and do better things than what they've done, I think you'd have to say Elliot, because I think if Klopp's in the room, he'd say Elliot as well, based on the amount of times that he started them. And then, you know, Gakpo was a player that, you know, come into a team that wasn't performing, made us a little bit more solid, because I think with Liverpool, with the system that we've got, our defending starts from the front, and I don't think we see much of that in the first part of the season. You know, we talked about Nunes before. I think he's probably not in that mold. He probably doesn't think about his defensive duties first. Well, we know he definitely doesn't think about his defensive duties first. Whereas Gakpo has been able to come in and just make us a little bit more solid, which in turn has allowed us to sort of go on that run that we went on. But you can see him improving game by game, and I think he's a really exciting one. You know, that was a player that none of us really seen it coming. There was a couple of links, but it was on that he was going to Man United, wasn't it?
Yep.
And then all of a sudden we get him, because obviously he's the type of, you know, the deal was right or whatever it was, but we've got him, and I think he's really exciting. We can be really excited about him. And then obviously, you know, the main one for me is probably Bacicic. He saved our season arguably last year. You know, you think about we really were at the bottom of the barrel. I remember saying every week, it can't get worse than this. We've finally hit the bottom, and then all of a sudden we go and get beat 3-0. And you're just like, oh my God, it's happened again. And he come in and sort of steadied the ship. And he was the first name on the team sheets for a large part of last season, up until when he got injured. So I'm excited to see, you know, what he can bring next year. So I think there's a lot to be positive about and be optimistic about, because all of those players I've just mentioned there, they all shone in a season and in a team that was not shining and was not the Liverpool that we've come to know over the last few years. So if we can get back to those levels, and, you know, I'll use that machine and the cog analogy again, you know, they sort of were helping us in a broken machine. So if we can get to like being that really sort of solid, high operating machine that we can, and add in those players with the potential, then I think there's quite a lot to be optimistic about, to be honest.
Yeah, that's a really good shout from Sean that year, in that, you know, at different times, these younger players especially came in at a really, you know, tough times. You know, Curtis Jones gets his run, you know, when he sort of first comes in, the team aren't firing at all. You know, Bacicic, it is arguably even worse when sort of he's playing there. And sometimes that's nice, because it feels like a bit of a free hit. But I'm sure if you asked them, said, would you rather come into a team that's won 10 in a row or lost 4, they'd pick the first one. And so if we can get the machine pairing again, I think there's quite a few of these who could jump up a level.
I think there's quite a few as well on that list. You'd expect maybe to kick on again. I think, you know, the Gakpo points, you've got to give him so much credit, because he does come into that team where it's not functioning. And I think, you know, you're right, it is much harder to come into a side that's struggling, and he does that. And I think one thing that would have disappointed the manager, if you take the season in kind of two parts, that first part, teams were just running all over us. We were such an easy touch. You can just imagine kind of the team talks where if you get stuck into these, Liverpool aren't going to fancy it. And you saw it play out so many times where you could run right through the middle of the park against us, wouldn't be challenged. There were so many times where you're calling out for people to take yellow cards and just take the obvious foul, and yet it didn't happen. And then, you know, there's either a shot on goal or an actual goal, and you left cursing them a little bit. So I think the soft touch thing is important, and I do think that plays into recruitment. So whilst I think they'll certainly be interested in footballers of the calibre of Barella, or they should be, but then I think physicality will be something the manager's really looking at in terms of that midfield. People who can come in and be really imposing and really physical and can't run all over Liverpool. And that's, as I said, or stop people from running all over Liverpool. But those names there, John, I think you can make a case for lots of them. Listen, Salah's at an age now where he's not going to suddenly become better than what he is. He's also already very good, and you talked about the numbers there. I just do think he has a bit of a strange season at certain times where maybe he's not quite at his best, but you know, the numbers are there and the output's there. By Cesic, again, he's not massive in terms of physicality, but he's about 6 foot and he'll grow and get bigger and stuff. But I think all the signs from him is that he could be a really, really high-level footballer for Liverpool if he goes on that kind of journey that people are expecting him to. There's loads of signs of him being really smart. And don't get me wrong, there's certain games where he will get exposed. Maybe he did get exposed, Real Madrid being an example. But, you know, he's a young player. That's going to happen to you against players of that calibre.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, people, again, like Konate, you're talking about, again, it's an injury hit campaign, but if he can get him fit and firing and playing in most games, then I think he's got another level, Konate. I really do think he could be absolutely elite, but it's about keeping him on the pitch and keeping him fit. And then, yeah, there's others like Alisson. I mean, you're not going to get much more out of
him. Well, hopefully less out of him
because I think he just cemented that spot as he is the best goalkeeper in, you know, in the league, in Europe, in the world. You know, he's one of, if not the best goalkeeper that the club have ever had. Let's have it right. You know, people will maybe of a certain age argue Clemens, but outside of that, he is the best the club have ever had. So you're not going to get much more out of him. But yeah, in terms of that list, Gibbo, I think there's real signs. And Jones is, I still don't think we know with Jones yet, because he has that run, and I think he's pretty impressive in that run. You have to say that. And You know, Sean mentioned there he wasn't too sure on him. I think there was lots of people who weren't too sure on him, and I think he'll maybe need a slightly longer run. But when you did that interview with Gerrard, I took quite a lot from that, because Stevie spoke so well of him.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to. And I know he's got...
Well, he didn't have to meet me at all, to be honest.
At all, yeah. But, and I know, obviously, he's worked with him and stuff, but he did speak so, so well of him. And I think listening to that gave me a lot of comfort that there is maybe even more of a footballer in there than maybe one or two have given credit for. And I think, again, he's a good size. I think where you're seeing him pop up and adding goals as well, that's a massive tick in the box. If he can take that into next season, and it is still a nib for me, but if he can't take that into next season and the signs are positive, then again, he's someone where you'd be happy to see him come in. Maybe not starting every game, but certainly rotating him in and playing a number of football matches, you know, well into double figures. Again, he's a lad who struggled with injuries, so you've got to get him on the pitch and stuff. But again, if he can replicate that form towards the end of the season, he's a good addition to have around.
And just to sort of finish off, Josh, when the manager talks about, you can't wait for the first day of pre-season, he spoke about that. I think he's talking about stuff like this, what we've sort of ended up finishing on. Listen, he's got one new player. I'm sure he'd like one or two more. We'd all like one or two more. But I think he's looking at this and thinking, actually, there's still a lot to work with here. And I made mistakes. This is me being Jürgen. I was great. Jürgen will be thinking, I made mistakes. You know, some of the changes to be made to the systems or whatever didn't quite work. You know, there's maybe players that, you know, wish we'd have made different decisions on. You know, all the rest, all the stuff that we've talked about. But I think he'll be looking at it and thinking, actually, you know, I can get more out of him by doing this. I can get more out of this player by changing things slightly. You know, I can. There's players who showed me last season that they're ready to go up another level, and I think that's what he'll be thinking about when he says, "I'm really looking forward to the first day of this pre-season." I don't even think he's thinking about Teram or Barella or whoever you want to throw him. I think he's thinking about these boys.
Yeah, well, I think you see that sort of thing quite a lot, don't you? When, like, say, for example, a club are experiencing bad results and things like that, and they make a managerial change, and with the same group of players, they go and pick up massively, like Aston Villa, for example, under Emery, and compared to Gerrard. So I think generally the level of your players dictates where you finish in the table for the most part, I think, personally. And I think if you look at Liverpool's squad, particularly the first 11, I think Liverpool have still comfortably got like top three first 11 in the Premier League for me. And as you've pointed out there on that list, there's a lot of players that either A, spent a lot of the season injured, like, you know, Diaz, Jota, Konate. These are big players for Liverpool, and there's quite a few players in there who can just simply perform better. Like, I think the role change for Trent benefited them massively. Gakpo, I think, you know, we've just made a couple of points on him there. I think his future's interesting in terms of just like where he's going to be deployed, really. I think he's another pair of Sambas, really, isn't he? But I think in terms of, like, you know, is he going to be potentially in one of these new tens that we're kind of using? Is he going to be on the left?
One tens?
Well, there's a Liverpool podcast. maybe a number nine or something like that. I don't know. But then Nunes is on the bench. So I think Gakpo's future is interesting. But Klopp's still got, like, he's got a lot of quality there to get the most out of, a lot of potential to use as well. So it's just going to be the emphasis is going to be on Klopp again, as it has been throughout his career, to harvest as much as he can from this group of players and hopefully deliver another bit of silverware for us.
He's done it before, he can do it again. I'm not sure I'll do this show again, to be honest with you, but we shall see if we get the nod there. Neil is back next week. Loads to be excited about, I still think, but you know, we'd all like one or two more. If you are into the transfer stuff, Rob Gutman has just recorded a Gutter show that is out for audio subscribers, video subscribers. Me and Andy had a bit of a chat over the bacon butty. I swatted a coffee all over myself, which is quite funny. We're subscribing just for that. I think it made the cut. But also, we had a bit of a chat about transfer stuff throughout the week. Loads of really good audio and video stuff going out for subscribers. We've got a Robbie Fowler show we're recording tomorrow. Rough. I booked myself on it.
Yeah.
I was like, who? Oh, you were these.
You're
bums.
On the list, lad. You're on
I was like, you were these bums. sort of get me on there. So we're going to be talking about Robbie Fowler at the moment as well, but obviously following as things progress across the summer and looking forward to that pre-season game. So great time to subscribe to the Anfield app. We think, make sure you download the app. If you're not downloaded before, you get some free tokens to give everything a little bit of a go as well. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can join on YouTube as well and you get all our exit video content from there as well. But in the meantime, thanks a lot to Josh. Hope he comes back. Thanks a lot to Sean. Thanks a lot to Ian. Andy for producing. And Sam for doing live video. Our name Matt as well. What a hero. Up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.